Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. Whitewatersc.ie. Kildare
KFM. Now, personal use of drugs such as cannabis should be decriminalised, according to an expert in addiction studies. He's told the Oireachtas Justice Committee this. Dr. Garrett McGovern is a GP specialising in addiction medicine. He's the medical director and founder of Priority Medical Clinic, and he's on the line now. Dr. McGovern, good morning and welcome to the programme.
Morning, Owen, and thanks for having me on.
No problem at all. So Ireland's current drug policy criminalises people unnecessarily and makes it difficult for those with addiction issues to seek help. This is what you argued at the Oireachtas Justice Committee the other day.
I did indeed. So, we've had pretty progressive conversations about drug policy in the last 10 years in relation to a number of sort of key issues. One of them is decriminalisation of drugs for personal use. The other is injecting rooms for people who have who are entrenched injecting drug users. And the other is cannabis for medical use. You could extend that to maybe the legalisation of cannabis, but that, I don't think the government have any plans to do that at this moment in time. So we've had a lot of conversations. They've been very productive and very good, and we've got the debate stimulated, but we haven't actually changed anything. So that's the part that's frustrating for anyone who has adopted the position that I'm adopting, which is we need change. We're seeing far too much drug deaths. We're seeing deaths and deaths, by the way, DEBTS, and people dying. So I think we need change, and we're stuck because we're not changing, and many of the people who are still support a prohibitionist stance, I'm not really quite sure that they want, but I'm guessing that they either want that the drug laws will stay the same, or maybe they'll get more draconian. I don't know, but we want change.
I know you were speaking to the Journal as well ahead of your appearance at the Justice Committee. You said that you don't believe that decriminalising drugs will solve all of Ireland's problems, but that the current model of prohibition and criminalisation doesn't work. You said some people still hold the oversimplistic view that drugs are bad and therefore must be banned. When you talk about the types of drugs then that should be decriminalised for personal use, what are you talking about? Is it more cannabis, or, you know, where do you draw the line?
Well, you know, it's an excellent question. I mean, I suppose if anyone was looking at the Joint Justice Committee meeting the other day on Tuesday, you'll have got the thoughts of Nuno Capaz, who is runs the Dissuasion Committee over there. So he's very familiar with the Portuguese model. And the way they do it is, it's not a specific drug, so they don't have any differentiation between the types of drugs people are using. So it could be heroin, it could be cocaine. It's a lot of the drugs that are currently illicit and they're on the streets. But it's not so much what the drug is, it's how much they have. So there's a certain quantity that they have decided over there for each drug in terms of the amount that they would consider personal use. And within that, you won't receive a criminal record. So if it's quite, they've established that it is for personal use, then you will be brought into this, as they say, dissuasion committee, which will contain usually a social worker, possibly a counsellor, and someone from the department, and they will talk to you. And really what they're trying to establish, do you have a problem with the drug? And if you don't have a problem with the drug, well, then very, very little happens in reality. They do say, you know, try not to use the drug, hence the name, the dissuasion committee. But they don't they don't criminalise people. I mean, I think this is the key point here. When we say criminalise people, they're given a criminal record when, or in danger of criminal record when they're in possession of drugs. Now, not all misdemeanours in Ireland are like that. You know, we get penalty points. We you're on your mobile phone, you're not wearing a safety belt, but you don't get a criminal record for that. But you do get a criminal record if you're in possession. So that, I think that's wrong, and that needs to change. And as well as that, I mean, I mentioned a statistic the other day, you know, that there were almost 16,000 convictions for drug possession last year, and that's 70% of all drugs charges, just for simple possession, just possession of drugs for personal use. It's a lot of money, and it could be far better used elsewhere, I think most people would agree.
And if we just go back as well to the types of drugs as well, are you talking about if somebody was in possession of the likes of heroin, of cocaine, that they wouldn't receive a criminal record.
Yeah, but the key point isn't the drug. The key point is it for personal use? So if somebody's in possession of heroin, and the feeling is that the committee have decided, well, if you're within the limits, it looks like it's for personal use. The next thing they would explore through this group is, do you have a problem? You know, they may be on a program, they may be not on a program. And they'll receive help. So what happens when you adopt that approach is the sort of stigma that's associated with this and the coming forward tends to reduce. And that's what they've shown. Because in Portugal, they didn't just decriminalise the personal possession of drugs. They had a whole gamut of other approaches, like much more treatment for people, much more a real health-led approach. So it wasn't just... I mean, the drug policy and drug laws are only one aspect of changing, trying to reduce harm. And they did it with across the board. They just had a much more pragmatic view to this. This started because the HIV transmission rate and the overdose death rate in Portugal was so high in 2001, and they were wasting an awful lot of money on putting people through the court system. So they said, look, we're not doing this anymore. We're not going to have a moral view on this. Drugs are wrong and they should be out of sight, out of mind. So they changed it. And if you look at the results, and it's not perfect in Portugal. I mean, it's very easy when you adopt a position like mine that you want to look, you know, for the most perfect model. They still have a lot of drug use in Portugal, but it is far better country to live in terms of that problem in 2022 than it was in 2001.
Yeah, I can absolutely see the point that you're making and the side of things that you're coming from. But also, there will be people listening that will have an alternative view. And I know you've dealt with this as well, saying that some people view decriminalisation of drugs as being a slippery slope to full legalisation. But in Portugal, for example, that hasn't happened. Some people listening might say that if you decriminalise drugs, it'll make it easier for people to get drugs. It'll make it easier for people to fall into addiction. What would you say to that?
Well, that's not the experience in Portugal, and Portugal is a model that is kind of, you know, respected throughout kind of the world in relation to this. So that didn't happen. In relation to, you know, I think the other issue, the other claim from people, and it was made the other day, is that the deterrent effect will be gone. Well, you need to wake up. I mean, I, you know, 16,000 convictions, the deterrent didn't work there, right? If the deterrent worked, it might have some merit, but it doesn't have any merit. And there's no international evidence to show that the harsher your laws, the less drugs people will take. That's just not true. So if we're not deterring people from using drugs with a paradigm of prohibition and criminalisation, well, then something needs to change. What is that? Do we need to get, you know, I think we need a more health-led approach. Maybe there are groups think we need to be harder on people who use drugs. I don't share that view, and I don't think that's supported by the international evidence.
You're also saying that aside from exploring decriminalisation and potentially legalisation, that there needs to be an attitudinal change, a cultural shift, perhaps, with how we view drugs.
I think so. I think within that, Owen, I think we probably do need to get more educated on this. I mean, one of the things that really does frustrate me is where you get into a debate with somebody, they don't know the difference between decriminalisation and legalisation, and they're not really well informed. And if you come to a debate and you're not well informed, and I've been at this now for a long, long time, and I'm not trying to be, you know, some expert who knows everything about drug policy around the world, but you really need to come to the table. Your opinion is important, but you need to educate yourself. And a lot of the public don't educate themselves. They kind of view this as someone else's problem until it is their problem or a member of their family's problem.
Okay, explain the difference then between decriminalisation and legalisation.
So legalisation, okay, decriminalisation is where the person who is in possession of drugs does not receive a criminal record, does not go through what we call a criminal justice process. So they're not criminalised, okay? They don't get a criminal record. They're treated in a much more humane way. The drugs that they have in their possession are still illegal drugs. They're still sold illicitly on the street. So there's no regulatory market like there is for alcohol or tobacco. That's decriminalisation. Legalisation is different. And if anyone says, look, what's legalisation like? alcohol. Now, I know people say, well, we haven't got it right with alcohol. And that's right, we haven't got it right with alcohol. But I do make the point, we're very lucky we have alcohol regulated, because it's a very, very dangerous drug. And it would be a lot more dangerous if it was in the hands of cartels. I wouldn't even like to imagine what it would be like trying to police that. So that's what regulation is, where you have ways of being able to regulate. Now, there are challenges. I mean, people say, well, how do you regulate heroin? And I said, well, that's not that difficult to regulate heroin. They do it in Switzerland, they do it in Holland, they do it in Australia, where they have people who are entrenched injecting drug users. They come to a clinic, it's medicalized, and they're given, they come to a clinic three times a day and they get their heroin, and they do very well. The outcome studies tend to be very, very good. So that drug can be regulated. There are other challenges, like, you know, drugs like ecstasy and cocaine. Cocaine is a tough one, I admit. I mean, there is no blueprint around the world for regulating cocaine. But we don't have to start this off as some sort of, you know, open all these shops tomorrow. We could do it, for instance, with cannabis, because it has been done around the world, and cannabis is widely regarded as less harmful than many of those other drugs, and I include alcohol in there. So we have an opportunity to do it with cannabis while we're not doing it. And I don't think for one minute we should legalize a drug and leave it at that. If we legalize a drug, we're now going to have a drug that we know the dose of, we know what's in it, the other constituents. Now we have a great opportunity to study the drug. When a drug's in an illicit market, it's very, very, very difficult to do research studies with any degree of accuracy.
So just finally, to finish on this, Dr. McGovern, as I said, you're the medical director and founder of the Priority Medical Clinic. You help people with genuine addiction issues, but you also have met people who are sent to you because they were found with a small amount of drugs, such as cannabis. They don't have any addictions or addiction issues. So what you're describing it as being a box-ticking exercise, and perhaps it's taking up room for people who actually have genuine addiction issues.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that really is a frustration. I've had people come to me, they don't have a problem with cannabis, but they've been caught in possession of it. They have a probation officer, they have a solicitor, they have court time, and then they're coming to see me. Those things are colossal. And that's only one person. Mm. I don't get many of these, but I do get them from time to time. And I kind of, you know, it's a tough one, because they're asking me to treat somebody that doesn't probably need treatment, and that's difficult. But the demand, that's what the courts want. I just think that's completely unnecessary. I don't know why we do that. We wouldn't treat somebody because they went out, on a Saturday and had a few drinks. That'd be stupid. So it's because of the illegality of that drug that they're with me, and with me is superfluous. It's silly. They shouldn't be with me.
Okay, I think it's an interesting conversation. Interesting to start having this conversation as well. And as we mentioned from the outset, you brought it up at the Oireachtas Justice Committee on Tuesday. And Dr. Garrett McGovern is a GP specialising in addiction medicine, medical director and founder of the Priority Medical Clinic. Just before we let you go, Dr. McGovern, very important as well to say, to bookend this chat, if you are somebody who is struggling with addiction, it's important to reach out and get the help. So while we're talking about, you know, the decriminalisation and stuff like that for maybe people who take it recreationally, etc. Yeah. But on the flip side, it is an important issue if somebody is struggling with addiction.
Without a shadow of a doubt, people, untreated addiction causes a lot of misery for people, for their families, and even for communities. And it costs an awful lot of money. They need help. And don't be afraid to reach out for help. There is help out there. And it depends on where you live. Some areas of the country are not served as well as others, and it depends on drugs. But there is help out there. If you want to get better, there, without a shadow of a doubt, there's help.
Okay. Dr. McGovern, thanks for taking our call this morning, and good morning to you.
Kildare Today. With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie. Kildare
KFM. We're going over to Naas Municipal District now, and Labour Councillor Anne Breen does join me. Good morning, Anne.
Good morning, Ciara. Morning to your listeners.
Well, thank you very much. We're going to speak about the local property tax. You have asked the Council to make available to the public a list of the projects supported by the LPT in Naas MD since 2019. You say it's in the interest of enhanced communication around the use of the tax.
Yes, it is, Ciara. I welcome the report, as it does acknowledge objection of my motion, which is to enhance and improve communication to the public as to how their property tax is used. It is good to hear that the council are planning and explain the current communications going forward. And as it stands, community projects are highlighted, but that going forward, as the report mentions, all projects and funding will be communicated. So when I'm out in the town and in my municipal district, people will say to me, what is my local property tax used for? I can point them to a link on the council website where they can see for themselves where their local property tax is used. And I think it would be useful that there would be unanimity across all MDs and how this communicates LPT funding projects so that it is clear and easily assessed.
Okay, and that's so has the council confirmed that that will be happening, that publishing of the link? And when will that happen?
Well, that will probably happen as soon as we do the local property tax in October.
Okay, so a week or two after this happens, or how long are we?
Yes, I hope so. I will keep the pressure on.
Okay.
And make sure this happens.
Okay, we'll get back to you on that, obviously, because every single member or a resident of the county will be interested in that one. And traffic in Salins Village, always discussed, obviously. You asked for an update on the progress, success or otherwise, on the traffic calming project in the village.
Yes. Now, the work in Salins has been widely welcomed by residents and the traders, and I am quite happy about that. But the problem I have is people are ringing me and they let me know they're not happy with the bollards. Now, I know it is important that the cyclists are protected, but I think this is a distraction. These bollards are a distraction for motorists, and I think it would be a concern that this is addressed and cyclists should be safeguarded.
And the council did say what to you?
Well, I'm still not happy with the report. They didn't actually answer my report about the bollards. I think they talked about the work that was going on in Salins, and I welcome the work that's going on in Salins. But I feel the bollards are an issue. They're a safety issue, and they're a distraction for motorists. And we have to safeguard cyclists, because if we want children to go to school and we want people to cycle, I can't see why they need those bollards in Salins. And the colour of them is a distraction as well, because nighttime, people are telling me, nighttime they hit them, and I know they're plastic bollards, but if the cyclist was going past and they hit a bollard, that would be a big issue.
And obviously, you know, Owen is a resident of Salins, and Owen, I know you want to touch on the subject.
Yeah, just Anne, a question for you on the layout of the village, because obviously I've been in touch with residents up and down in Salins. What exactly is going on in the village? Because we have the bollards, that's fine, they've been there for the last while. The ground is being dug up. Is there speed bumps going in? Because there seems to be speed bumps there at the moment, which I didn't know were being installed, and there's a traffic island now being installed at Castle Fen as well. So do you know the extent of the works in Salins and how long they're going to go on for?
Well, the public want to about July. There's a coming in July to level off the footpath and the road. But I personally feel at the crossing at Castleside, including those at Hillside, Castle Fen, Castleside, Castle Park, Canal Road, Osbaston Road, the platforms are scheduled to be undertaken by a specialist road surfing contractor during the third week of July. So during that time, it will go out into public consultation and the scheme can be brought forward to follow the scheme.
Right, yeah, because I just wasn't sure whether or not the road is going to be levelled off or whether the bumps that are on the road at the moment are speed bumps and they're going to be left in the village. You might find that out for us, because
I will, yes.
They're the same colour as the road. They haven't been, you know, painted as colours of speed bumps or whatever. They're just literally bumps in the road. So a lot of people are concerned about that. You might check that out for us.
Okay,
and of course we will get back to that. Moving to your next motion, and you asked the council to contact the owners. This is of a vacant piece of land. It's formerly Sarah Flood's public house at Corbin's Lane. You have asked for the area to be cleaned, cleared, tidied up and properly secured. You say it's representing a public eyesore.
It is a public eyesore. And if you look at it, the fencing all around that area is makeshift fencing. There's rubbish in there, graffiti in there, and there's big boards in there. And I've asked the council to make contact with the owner to put up proper fencing. Now, we have Teddy Towns who do wonderful work, and this is a big problem for them. And for us to be able to get the Eyeball Award in the autumn, this has to be cleaned up. Because if they look at that, we definitely will not get the Eyeball Award.
Okay, finally, and just on an update, you've asked the council on what course of action could be taken to ensure the reopening and proper use of the council-owned vacant premises in Basin Street in Naas.
Now, the four properties that I highlighted, they're all boarded up and they are privately owned. So the vacant house officer is going to investigate the building and in an effort to bring it back into use. Now, there's two buildings on the left-hand side as you go into Basin Street, and they are council-owned. And I want to know what is planned for them. It was the old health service board property, and I want to know what they're going to plan for that. So I was out yesterday, I took photographs, I've sent them into the council just to let them know what I'm talking about, because there is a bit of confusion. They think that all the properties on that side is used. Even the information centre, I think it's closed as well. So that could be a third property on the left-hand side of Basin Street that needs attention.
Okay, that is great. We will keep up to date with you, obviously, on a few of those motions in particular, Anne, but particularly the whole of County Kildare, as I noted, in terms of people who are resident, will want to know about the local property tax being made available to the public, a list of the projects that will be supported in your area. Thank you so much to Labour Councillor Anne Breen there of Naas MD.
Well, the Athy Community Family Resource Centre is hosting a Community Health and Wellbeing Day for Athy tomorrow, and it runs from around about 10:30 tomorrow morning until into the afternoon, and there's a lot planned for the course of the day. And on the line now is Family Support and Community Development Worker with the Athy Community Family Resource Centre, Brenda O'Connor. Good morning to you, Brenda. Welcome to the programme.
Thanks, Owen. Good morning to you too.
So tell me a little bit about this Community Family Wellbeing Day. It's the second day, such day that you've hosted, but what exactly takes place and what happens?
This is our second one, as I said. The first one we had pre-COVID and was attended by about 100 people. It's a chance for everyone in the community to come along and get lots of information and advice on various different health and wellbeing topics.
And it's completely free for people to attend. I know that there are a number of organisations that are attending as well. You might just go through some of them and people can kind of take note if it'll be relevant to them.
Absolutely, yeah. We've organisations that have covered physical, mental, emotional and children's health needs. We have the Irish Heart Foundation mobile unit will be there to check blood pressure and pulse checks. So that's always a good one to keep an eye on. We've Arthritis Ireland, excuse me, we've Breast Cancer Ireland, we've MABS, which is the Money Advice and Budgeting Service. We also have the Alzheimer's Society, and we have someone coming along to help with smoking cessation, so to help you quit smoking if you'd like to do that. We have the people from Senior Alert Scheme, which is a home monitored alarm, you know, for people living alone or vulnerable people. We've been Seymour, and we've Athy Women's Shed. We've InSync, which is a youth project. We've Chuck Chairman, which is a domestic violence support agency. And we also have Kildare Traveller Action.
Wow, I was just looking at some of those organisations. It's a huge, huge day. Where is it taking place?
So it's taking place in our centre, which is on Woodstock Street in Athy. A lot of people would know it as it used to be the CDP building.
Right.
It's just past the Amber Garage on your left as you're coming up Woodstock Street from Athy.
Right, and it starts at 10:30 tomorrow morning, running until what time?
10:30 till approximately 1.
Right, okay. So if people want to go along to get a health check or a well-being check, they can do so completely free for local people to attend. And just go through some of those organisations again. The Alzheimer's Society, Arthritis Ireland, Breast Check, the Irish Heart Foundation, the Pubble Senior Alert Scheme, Chuck Terman, InSync Youth Project, MABS, there's the Child Health Development Officer will be there, members from the HSE, the Kildare Traveller Action. There's more or less something for everyone there if they would like to get checked out, Brenda?
There is indeed. And, you know, it's a great chance for people just to come up and have a look, see what organisations are around, what are available to people in Athy. Have a chat, have a cup of coffee, have a healthy snack, of course, and just meet people and meet us and see what goes on in our centre also.
And it's not just, I suppose, limited to people from Athy. People from the surrounding areas can come as well?
Absolutely. We cover Athy and the urban and rural district, yeah. Anybody that's interested can come along.
Okay, super stuff. 10:30 in the morning until 1 o'clock in the afternoon, a community health and wellbeing day for Athy and the surrounding areas, taking place in the Athy Community Family Resource Centre on Woodstock Street in Athy. And Brenda O'Connor is the Family Support and Community Development Worker with that organisation. Brenda, many thanks for joining us on the programme this morning, and the best of luck with that day tomorrow morning.